This is Good Together, the podcast that inspires you to create change in the world every day. Keep listening for actionable tips and tricks to incorporate eco-friendly practices into your daily life.
We've been featured by Apple as the number one podcast for conscious consumers, and we can't wait to welcome you into our community of changemakers. I'm Lisa.
And I'm Laura. We're the founders of Brightly.eco, the new platform for conscious consumers. We believe in supporting all creatures, great and small.
And our team of experts show you how to live and shop responsibly by sharing world-changing lifestyle ideas, products, and more. To read show notes from Good Together and to browse all of the planet-friendly goodness that we feature, head to brightly.eco/podcast.
And to help spread the word about the podcast, tap on this episode and share Good Together with your friends and family. A simple text message helps us grow and create change around the world.
This episode is brought to you by Sheets and Giggles. Laura, you've probably heard me talk all the time about my love for Sheets and Giggles. I've been sleeping on their new sustainable eucalyptus sheets for the past 8 months straight. I recommend them 1000%. Every week I wash them and put them back on the bed right away. They're my go-to sheets. All of my other sheets, even the ethical ones, are taking a long break.
After hearing you rave about them for so long, Lisa, I finally got a chance to try their new eucalyptus comforter. So I'm a weirdo. I really like having a comforter on my bed all the time, even when we have the heat blasting. I haven't woken up once hot while I was using this one from Sheets and Giggles. It's a great ethical and sustainable alternative to the down comforter we used to use that's now sitting on our guest bed. Another thing I love about Sheets and Giggles is that they don't use plastic packaging and the materials don't use pesticides, so they're kind to our animal and insect friends.
They also plant a tree for each sheet set that is sold, and they're passionate about giving back. They give 10% off to customers who donate their old sheets to homeless shelters, and they have donated over $40,000 to Colorado COVID relief.
Good Together listeners get 15% off by using the code BRIGHTLYECO at SheetsGiggles.com.
Did you know that 40% of engagements occur between Thanksgiving and Valentine's Day? I was actually surprised to learn that Valentine's Day is only the fifth most popular day to propose, after Christmas, Christmas Eve, New Year's Day, and Sunday before Christmas. And yet millions of Americans are probably right at this very second researching and researching everything there is to know about engagement rings, diamonds, and precious metals. Is there such a thing as a sustainable or conflict-free diamond? Has there been progress made within the industry since Leo DiCaprio starred in Blood Diamond? Listen to today's episode for a primer on all things diamonds from a founder whose company makes carbon-negative diamonds from air. And I promise you, I'm not even kidding. Hi, and welcome to Good Together, listeners. As you know, Valentine's Day is just around the corner, and even though this Valentine's Day is very much like no other, love is still in the air, right? People are hosting Zoom weddings, getting married, and of course, getting proposed to before that, right? So if you're yet to propose or get proposed to, here's the thought for you. Do you know how sustainable your engagement ring is? What is it made of, and who has mined the diamond you are so proudly wearing? Over the past year, Laura and I have discovered quite a few ethical jewelry and diamond companies. But when I heard of Ether Diamonds, I knew we had to interview their founder because their diamonds are made from air. You heard me right, listeners. Ether Diamonds produces diamonds from air. And without further ado, I want to welcome Ryan Shearman, Ether Diamonds co-founder, to our podcast. And Ryan, please welcome and please introduce yourself and tell us, are your diamonds really made from air?
Well, thanks for having me. So my name is Ryan Shearman, and I'm the co-founder and CEO of Ether Diamonds. And yes, we make diamonds from thin air. Essentially, we've developed a proprietary technology that allows us to transform harmful CO2 that's in the air into gem-grade diamonds. So we're very excited, having just launched, and yeah, happy to tell you all about it today.
That's amazing. Whenever I was telling my husband last night about that, my mom like, wait, no, really? From air? That's cool. We'll talk about more details about the whole, I really want to kind of get the understand at least a little bit, or pretend that I understand the chemical processes behind that. But I'm curious if you can tell me a bit about yourself, what kind of gave the start, gave you the idea for the company, why and when you started it?
Sure. So we started the company in 2018. I had just sold my previous business. I knew that I wanted to do something that was very impact driven. I'd become more and more interested in the things that were happening in the climate space, and started asking myself, what can I bring to the table to have, you know, the maximum output possible? So I started really sitting there analyzing my skill set based on different things I've done in my career, and in chatting with a former colleague of mine, who's now my co-founder, our COO, Dan Wino, we started having a discussion about direct air capture, new technologies that were coming to the forefront that would enable humanity to decarbonize our environment using technology rather than just natural-based climate solutions. And in those conversations, it occurred to us, diamonds are just crystalline carbon. Carbon is way, way high in its concentration in terms of its atmospheric makeup. CO2 is over 400 parts per million. The need of humanity to bring that back down to pre-industrial levels is quite strong, quite important. And we believe we've found a way to do that while transforming something that is ever-present and harmful into something rare and beautiful.
That's very interesting. So I'm curious, what was your background? Do you and your co-founder have kind of chemical, engineering, scientific background?
So interestingly enough, and I do think this is what makes us so well suited for this, we're both engineers who also have experience in the jewelry industry. So I have a degree in mechanical engineering, and much of my early career was focused on material science. Dan and I actually met while we were working for David Yurman. So I was one of the early employees on David Yurman's men's team, and Dan worked on the women's team. We sat all of 6 feet away from each other and, you know, quickly became friends. And it was actually probably 10 years after we met that we started talking about what would eventually become Ether.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, before we talk more about Ether, I would love for us to talk first about the difficult stuff, right? So what is wrong with the current and traditional diamond industry, the one that has existed for the past few hundred years? We've briefly covered with Laura in the previous episodes, but I would love kind of to hear your take on it because, of course, you know, you are in this industry, you understand all of the details, the current situation. Is there progress that the industry as a whole is doing?
Sure, there's definitely progress. Mm-hmm. I don't think there was enough progress for me to sit back and say, yes, the industry is doing all that they can to reverse behaviors that have been well entrenched. Like you said, you know, this industry is longstanding. We've been pumping CO2 into the atmosphere at industrial scale for well over a century. And diamonds really, I mean, the first recorded diamond usage in jewelry goes back several millennia. For the past 400 years, very much so. It's been ingrained in human society. And then really in the last 110 years or so, it's really started to kind of hit its stride, especially accelerating after the Great Depression. And through that time frame, it was not even part of the equation. People weren't concerned about the environmental footprint. What does it really take to pull these diamonds out of the ground? If you want to understand the ramifications of diamond mining, the amount of soil that has to come out of the ground to produce a single 1-carat diamond, about enough to fill the average American living room.
Wow.
It also, yeah. So in addition to just moving that earth permanently, because no one backfills these mines after that, you know, they're done pulling up the kimberlite deposit that they've been excavating from the ground, these holes are left there as permanent pockmarks on the planet. And we view this as problematic, but as an opportunity as well. What can we do to introduce a new paradigm where diamonds don't have to contribute to climate change? They can reverse climate change. And that's been our focus. There's another side of the equation that often is discussed, but maybe not always at the same time. And we see opportunity there as well. And that is about empowering consumers. The jewelry trade and the diamond trade in general are sometimes hard to navigate for consumers. And that's by design, right? The harder it is to understand what it is you're buying, the more opportunity there is to take advantage of consumers, perhaps. And we operate with radical transparency at Ether. We're looking to make sure that we, as a trusted provider, as a trusted brand, are there to hold your hand through the process so you know what you're buying. You're not just getting a piece of beautiful jewelry, you're getting that outsized environmental impact that comes along with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wanted to talk about the environmental impact of the diamond industry as well, because usually, like, you know, we've definitely covered at least a little bit the aspects of, you know, of child labor, illegal and unethical mining. But yeah, very interesting to know the environmental impact of the diamond industry too. So let's jump into that next question. You guys say you use the term carbon negative, right? I am kind of starting to understand why you're able to use this term and why your diamonds are actually carbon negative. So can you explain it to us in a bit more detail? What does it mean exactly? How have you been able to achieve this? And was this kind of the main, like the very original goal when you decided to run the company this way?
Yeah, so the goal has always been to have a significant material impact on the way diamonds are produced from an environmental standpoint. Essentially, you know the term carbon neutral. Everybody's familiar with the term. 10 years ago, that wasn't the case. Carbon negative is kind of at that stage right now. And we see a number of different terms being used and thrown around. And there is no real unified definition of what carbon negative it is. But there is a generally accepted description. So a carbon negative product is one that is produced in a manner where all logistics and operations and all emissions related to that are carbon neutral, right? For us, no matter what we do as a company, when we have to go on a business trip, the flights that we're taking, the car rides that we're taking are creating emissions. So your baseline environmental footprint from those things must be neutralized. Then beyond that, your product must sequester carbon from the environment. And that can come through a number of different ways. So if you simply are doing bad things, emitting a ton of emissions and buying carbon offsets, that's never going to get you to carbon negative. At best, you'll be carbon neutral. And it's a little confusing, frankly, but this is something that people will begin to understand. It'll become much more commonplace. Phrases like carbon negative or climate positive is another phrase that we've used ourselves and have seen being used in the climate space more broadly. We are really excited about what we're doing, because from an operational perspective, when we talk about transportation, shipping products, things like that, that base case, all of the emissions related to that are totally offset through a number of natural climate solutions that we fund, right? So this could be things like afforestation and reforestation, mangrove development, regenerative farming. But beyond that, every atom of carbon that makes up our diamonds came directly from the atmosphere. It's a permanent sequestration of what was previously pollution. So this is something we're excited about, because utilization of atmospheric carbon is something that has presented a challenge. You know, when we pull carbon out of the atmosphere in one way or another, we have to do something with it. And some of those solutions that are out there today ultimately result in that carbon making their way back into the atmosphere. Imagine I grow a forest and I've pulled all of that carbon out of the air because trees use it to grow. If those trees are later burned, when they're burned, they're releasing carbon dioxide right back into the atmosphere. So that's not a permanent sequestration. When we make diamonds from atmospheric carbon, there's no way that that solid crystalline carbon is ever going back into the air. And that's something that we're really excited about.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's really amazing. Like, just the whole idea. And again, until I heard about Ether diamonds, I don't think it was ever like in my head or anyone who I'm talking to about Ether that, you know, just a brilliant idea. Take carbon out of the air and create a diamond out of it. That's brilliant.
Yeah, essentially, we're turning pollution into solution.
Yeah, I love that. Love that. So let's talk a bit more how Ether diamonds are produced. And you kind of explained that already, but how do they differ from conventional diamonds and lab-grown diamonds? I think there is still a little bit of confusion. You know, obviously, okay, the first, I think, we generally understand what conventional diamonds are, right? What is lab-grown, if you can explain it, because you obviously are much more educated on this. What is lab-grown diamonds, and how does Ether diamonds compare to them?
Sure. So a lab-grown diamond is a diamond that is grown in a laboratory environment using one of two manufacturing technologies. So chemical vapor deposition and high pressure, high temperature. And those two technologies are a bit different. The end product from those two processes are a bit different. One is better suited for larger stones. One is better suited for smaller stones for a number of reasons. We find lab-grown diamonds to be a step in the right direction. Right. Mm-hmm. As I said before,
absolutely,
there are things that are trending in the right direction from an environmental standpoint. I just didn't think it was going fast enough or going as far as it should be. And ultimately, you know, if I can't trust someone else to do it, it's in my nature to, you know, take the reins and do it myself. So that was a big factor in why we wanted to do this. And one of the big fundamental differences here between a regular lab-grown diamond and what we do is where the carbon comes from. So the carbon that's used to create diamonds in a laboratory today, for the very most part, comes from fossil fuels.
Oh, wow.
Right? So hydrocarbon feedstock is the predominant, you know, source of carbon for a diamond grown in a laboratory. And that comes from fracking. It comes from crude oil production. And for us, inherently propping up the oil and gas industry is in no way, shape, or form sustainable or environmentally friendly. So, you know, our source of carbon is atmospheric air pollution. The two are fundamentally different. And what we've seen thus far is, you know, within the industry, the mining companies and the lab-grown diamond companies arguing over who is less harmful to the environment. To me, that's not even an argument that is worth participating in. Lab-grown diamonds don't require massive holes to be cut in the ground. They don't lead to acid mine runoff. There's a slew of reasons why lab-grown diamonds are emphatically a step in the right direction, but they still require fossil fuels. They require a ton of energy. And based on where they're produced in the world, more often than not, that's not clean energy. And it's resulting in a significant amount of emissions. We take the paradigm and flip it on its head. We're not arguing over who hurts the planet the least. We're helping the planet. And that's a fundamental difference that makes ether unique in the market.
Absolutely. So basically, your product is net positive, climate positive, or again, carbon negative. And that does Correct. Make a huge difference. And so I think I've seen that on the website. So technically, or I don't know, chemically speaking, your diamonds are essentially real diamonds, right? And lab-grown diamonds, they're not real diamonds.
So to be clear, mm-hmm. lab-grown diamonds and ether diamonds are diamonds.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The Federal Trade Commission has changed the rules up a bit, but essentially what we're making are atomically identical to what comes from the ground. Mm-hmm. There are simulants in the market. These are not diamonds. These do not have the same material properties. Cubic zirconia is probably the best known simulant in the market. And they don't have the luster. They don't have that sparkle, the fire that a real diamond has. Diamond is a super material. And if you buy anything other than a diamond, you're shortchanging yourself. So we wanted to make sure that no matter what we did, if we were going to produce diamonds, we were going to do it the right way. And what we are producing are type 2A gem grade diamonds with the highest color and clarity grades.
Got it. Thank you for clarifying it. That's amazing, because I'm definitely not an expert in the diamond industry by far. Another interesting term that Ether Diamonds uses on its website is fair mined. Can you explain this a little bit to us? Why this term, what it means to you, what it means to the ethos of the company?
Absolutely. So fair mined is a label, mm-hmm. and it comes along with certification based on the source of that gold. So, you know, essentially, gold can be pulled out of the ground in a number of different ways, all with different environmental impacts. Fairmined is an organization that comes in and they certify that this gold is coming from responsible, artisanal, small-scale mining operations across the world. And they have standards in place to ensure that there are responsible practices. So for us, if we're going to go and do the right thing with respect to the diamonds, we can't shortchange our customers by going and getting any type of gold. And, you know, when we first started, we said, all right, perhaps we can get recycled gold. And it turns out that is a bit of a greenwash term. Hmm. There are recycled gold sources that can be clean. But if I take dirty gold and I make some jewelry with it and I have some scrap left over and I melt that down once, it's now considered recycled gold. So just because it was dirty a week ago and has been remelted, that doesn't make it any cleaner. So we needed to make sure that the absolute source of the gold from when it came out of the ground was from the best, most responsible operations that we could possibly find. And that's why we've been working with Fairmine to do that. We're going to be doing similar stuff with other precious metals, but to start, we're focused on gold, the significance of gold in the jewelry industry for, since we started wearing jewelry and adorning our bodies, gold has been kind of that paramount, top of the top when it comes to precious metals. And we've designed our entire line around that.
Very interesting. Yeah, because I was so focused on, I think, diamonds, and I was preparing our conversation all about diamonds because, diamonds made out of the air, which just blew my mind. But obviously, you need precious metals for the rings and jewelry too. So I was not familiar with Fairmine. I love that you guys use a third-party company verification system to source precious metals as well. So if I'm understanding correctly, right now you only work with gold, right, for your jewelry?
That is correct. We are going to be introducing at least one new type of precious metal that is based off of some really, really amazing and environmentally friendly technology. That'll come later this year. But right now we're using Fairmine Gold exclusively because, as you said, it's certified, third-party, responsible, and just like our diamonds. And just for, we're not coming out here and making baseless claims around our diamonds. We do have similar third-party certifications around that. So we can kind of know and feel comfortable that the claims that we make across everything we do are of the utmost transparency and legitimacy.
Love it. It's super important. So since we're talking about third-party certifications, verifications, we always kind of focus in each episode. We want to kind of educate our consumers and listeners and give them really kind of simple tips on how to kind of make essentially better decisions as consumers, right? So talking about third-party companies, what certifications should our listeners, consumers in general, be looking for when purchasing jewelry, diamonds, rings, and things like that? So Fairmine is one of them. Maybe if you could mention some other non-certifications or companies, nonprofits that our audience should know about.
So this is where it actually gets a bit challenging. Mm-hmm. I wish there were enough of them for me to be able to mention them, at least within the jewelry industry. Fairmine is great, and what they've done has been fantastic. And there are different degrees of responsibility associated with Fairmine Gold. We could unpack that one for an hour, but frankly, this is a new thing that's kind of coming to the market. There's a company that's called SES, and they build standards into various different industries for responsible manufacturing. They're doing some work right now that we're involved in around setting kind of these rules of thumb. And then on top of that, the groups that verify and grade the diamonds themselves, right? So some of the larger ones in the world would be GIA, the Gemological Institute of America, and IGI, International Gemological Institute. We're having all of our stones graded by IGI. IGI is making strides to ensure that responsible manufacturing from an environmental standpoint is something that is front and center for consumers. So can't really go too deep into the details and stuff because a lot of that is still happening from what we understand. Mm-hmm. But in general, IGI is really kind of setting themselves apart in the industry with kind of a general willingness to partner with brands like us and make improvements to how diamonds are graded beyond just the four C's, right? If you've heard of the four C's, we envision a future that companies like IGI will have a role in creating where new standards are put in place, and that drives a shift across the entire industry.
This episode is brought to you by Sheets and Giggles, a company with a punny name but a seriously sustainable mission to make better betting for everyone. We started partnering with Sheets and Giggles earlier this year, and the positive reviews from our community keep coming in.
I've been on a hunt for sustainable betting for a long time now, until Brightly actually recommended Sheets and Giggles. I would highly recommend. The material is great. I personally tend to get hot at night and my boyfriend tends to get cold. So it definitely serves as a happy medium. Highly recommend.
I also get hot at night, and I found that after sleeping with Sheets and Giggles moisture wicking sheets over the past few months, I can't remember the last time I woke up overheated.
I love my Sheets and Giggles sheets. They're my absolute favorite. Not only because they're super duper soft, but they are sustainably and ethically made out of eucalyptus.
Yep, I love that our scout Ashley called out how soft the Sheets and Giggles sheets are. Plus, the eucalyptus that is in their 400 thread count sheets is grown without insecticides or pesticides. They also just launched a bunch of new colors, and I can't choose between navy, blue, and red. Help me!
Sheets and Giggles bedding is super lightweight and soft, and they really nail it on zero waste packaging.
We recommend Sheets and Giggles for the softest, most sustainable sleep out there. Good Together listeners get 15% off at checkout by using the code BRIGHTLYECO at sheetsgiggles.com.
So can you tell me the what does IGI stand for again?
The International Gemological Institute.
And the four C's you were talking about?
So yeah, when you buy a diamond, the four C's are, you know, the base characteristics upon which a diamond is graded and then priced at. So you've obviously got the carat weight of the stone, right? Carat is often confused for size, and it often presents itself that way, but it is actually a unit of weight. Then you've got the color of the stone, right? And that ranges from D all the way to the back end of the alphabet. DEF is the colorless range. Anything for a wedding or bridal or nice pieces of luxury jewelry is generally H color or better. And then you've got your cut. Your cut is going to be, you know, the symmetry, the dimensions, the polish of the stone. That's exactly how well, you know, the craftsmanship is with regard to the shape of the stone. And then you have your clarity. And clarity relates to the inclusions in the stone. So if you've ever looked at a diamond before, you know, as you move it around in the light, you might see small little specks of black or brown or gray inside the diamond. These are natural imperfections, right? When a diamond grows from the ground, there's a lot of different conditions happening all at the same time. And you get imperfections in the crystal lattice of the diamond. And if you think of other forms of carbon, right? Like the graphite in your pencil, it's black. So when you have carbon that is not in that perfect crystalline matrix, it presents as black. So that's why you get these little imperfections. So to review, carat, color, cut, and
clarity.
Yeah, those are the four C's.
Thank you. Thank you so much for explaining all of this. I feel like I kind of got like a diamonds 101 crash course because a lot of our listeners are younger too. So I'm sure I'm not the only one who is not familiar with all of these terms.
Happy to help.
Yeah, no, I love it. Well, I also wanted to talk to you about, since now we've talked a little bit of the kind of good certifications to look for, to think about, right? Let's talk about kind of the obvious red flags that consumers need to be aware of and avoid when shopping for diamonds and jewelry. You've mentioned a little bit of the greenwashing aspects. Maybe you can also tell us what other like greenwashing techniques or terms kind of are prevalent in this industry.
The word sustainable comes to mind. Mm-hmm. There are, and this is actually something that even the Federal Trade Commission has taken action on. There are brands who will come out and make claims around sustainability, claims that are unfounded. This was a bit more prevalent even just, you know, a year or two ago until the Federal Trade Commission came in and said, no, you cannot make these claims, not without proper substantiation. So when a brand comes out and says things like sustainable, it's hard to quantify sustainable. So there are brands, especially small brands, these are the ones that you see on Instagram perhaps, that sometimes make these claims and can't substantiate that. So that's something to be aware of. Ultimately, I would boil it down to making sure you're doing your own research, making sure you're buying from a source that you trust. And this isn't, you know, something that's immediately obvious. So another recommendation would be, you know, when you're out there and you're looking, buying a diamond can be a daunting process. But there's a wealth of information on the internet. The vast majority of consumers who buy diamonds, over 85% of consumers report that they do a ton of research online. The process can take 3 to 4 months.
Wow.
And that's because people want to really, you know, wrap their head around it. And then oftentimes they're looking for the right diamond. So when you're going out and you're buying a stone, something to look out for are the claims that the company's making. Do they have third-party certifications that support those claims? That's a big one. Okay. And then ultimately, you know, I don't want to just get to net zero. You know, I don't ever want to just be flat. We use this business as an economic engine for change. You know, we believe it's good to do good. And that's something that I would just always recommend from just the standpoint of being a consumer. I personally, in my life, always strive to shop with brands that have alignment with my personal values. And that's something that I couldn't recommend more.
Yep, love it. And I'll ask you more for more kind of like ethical general tips in the end of the episode too. One thing I wanted to ask, you were talking about something. Oh, yeah, this is not the question on in my notes, unfortunately. So sorry if it's a surprise, but I'm sure you're aware of this. The Kimberly process. Can we talk a little bit about that? There is other companies, kind of more. I would not call them ethical necessarily or sustainable jewelry and diamond companies, but I've been seeing a lot of the mention of the Kimberly process, which essentially kind of sort of proves that this company is sourcing their gemstones and diamonds ethically. Is that true?
This is a topic I could talk about for quite some time. And I don't want to just come out and bad mouth the Kimberly process, but I do believe it is a flawed process. And here's why. Mm-hmm. When they talk about ethically sourced diamonds, the Kimberly process has absolutely no bearing whatsoever on the environmental production of mm-hmm. those stones. It only ties to human rights abuses. The Kimberly process governs the production of diamonds in areas that are engaged in conflict, right? It prevents conflict diamonds from entering the market, or it's supposed to. And the industry likes to brag, oh, the Kimberly process stops 98-99% of conflict diamonds from getting to market. And that seems impressive until you realize what that 1 or 2% of diamonds that slip through the cracks looks like. And it's tons and tons of diamonds. You know, so we have illicit diamonds that are hitting the market every day. That's problematic. It should be zero. So it's not bad for the industry. It was a great thing. It's, again, like the introduction of lab-grown diamonds, a step in the right direction. But we as humans, the sentient beings on this planet, we need to do more. We need to strive to take things and continually improve them. And well, while the Kimberly process was a step in the right direction, we can do more. There are stones that would be coming from areas that maybe the average lay person would say, no, that's a conflict diamond. But because of the structure and because of certain definitions in the Kimberly process, it actually doesn't pertain to those diamonds. So you end up getting a number of different scenarios in which diamonds are produced in a way that is not ethical, but are considered ethical because they don't trigger, you know, certain parts of the Kimberly process. So again, it's a step in the right direction for the industry. We need to do more.
Absolutely. And that's kind of how I was thinking about that too. I was kind of, you know, as someone who researches a lot of like topics or sustainable brands, you know, I kind of got a sense that Kimberly process, I thought it was good, but I kind of had a sense that it's basically the very first or like minimal step that you can take to purchase like a little bit like a more ethical version of a conventional diamond. For me personally, a human rights abuses, like one thing I absolutely wanted to avoid is like the conflict diamond. That's just, you know, we all watched Blood Diamond probably with Leo DiCaprio. So, but yeah, I kind of had a sense that it's, you know, nothing is 100% perfect in terms of even like preventing 100% of conflict diamonds into the system. But you've mentioned, kind of alluded to, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I'm curious, do you have the numbers of like for the diamond industry, like how many diamonds are like produced per year, how many diamonds are bought per year? Like I've never knew this kind of figures. Sure.
So, you know, on average in recent years, it's been about 150 million carats of diamonds sold annually. So that's a pretty significant amount of diamonds. Mm-hmm. There's an interesting change happening right now. So, you know, when you open a new mining operation, whether it's a copper mine, a gold mine, or any other type of mine. You've already done a ton of geological surveys to the location. You've identified some type of mineral deposit that you want to excavate from the ground. You generally know almost exactly how much of it is underground. You know how long it's going to take to pull all of that up from underneath the ground, and you know effectively what the shelf life is of that mining operation. So because all of that is known, we can say that today, 70% of all mines that are currently operating will be closed by 2040. That means half of the global output of diamond mining will go away. It will disappear over the next 20 years. So in this case, we have demand increasing every year, but the global supply from the ground is going to be going down for the foreseeable future. We're not opening any new diamond mines. It's been a couple decades since the last large industrial diamond mine was commissioned. So this is a great opportunity for humanity to eventually phase out what would otherwise be called conflict diamonds, diamonds that are associated with human rights abuses. There's only so many of those in the Earth's crust. That's a good thing.
Exactly.
We're going to have to backfill that demand that's continually growing year after year for over a century.
With the population, of course. People love diamonds.
Mm-hmm. Right. So we need to produce more diamonds. Where are they going to come from? They're going to come from the laboratory. This is the inevitable future of the industry. Right now, if we had to quantify that in terms of dollars, there are different reports. I'm comfortable saying it's about an $80 billion global industry, the diamond jewelry industry.
Got it. Well, thank you so much for sharing all of the stats. That's very interesting. And I love kind of how you position the fact that it's a good thing that more mines are not open. I actually didn't know that. And I think it is a great news to us. And it's very interesting to kind of think about how timely, and it's a good time for us to think about and how to, you know, create diamonds in more ethical ways, or hopefully like you guys are doing, in a more climate positive and carbon negative ways. So these are all of the questions I had for you regarding ether diamonds and how your amazing diamonds are produced. But general questions that we love to ask our guests, I have a couple of them for you. And the first one, we love that. Please share 2, 1, 3, however many actionable tips on living ethically with our audience. It can have to do with diamonds, or it can have to do with eating out, or anything.
So this is a great question. And my first answer to that is very similar to what I said before. Think about where the products you buy come from. Think about what goes into them. Think about the materials. Do the research. It's kind of amazing, as I've leaned more and more into my own personal climate journey over the past couple of years, that I've found products that I didn't expect to be harmful to the environment are actually harmful to the environment. And I've worked to phase them out of my life. And that's something I can't recommend more. You know, if I asked someone on the street, do you know what your carbon footprint is? I would venture that the vast majority of people, and I ask people this a lot, would not know. In America, the average carbon footprint is about 16 metric tons. So, you know, what can you do in your life to be more responsible? It's not just about your carbon emissions, but where you source your products, fast fashion, right? We're not quite a fashion company, but we are fashion adjacent.
Yeah.
Fast fashion is terrible for the environment. So, you know, before you go and decide you want to buy that outfit, maybe consider what goes into it, where the raw materials came from, where it was produced. That type of actionable thinking will serve you well.
I love this. And I think it's super important to think this way, because we have been trained, right, for decades to not think where things come from, right? We have been disconnected with the producers, with factories who make our clothes, with farmers who grow our food. So right now we have to, again, train ourselves to think completely different. And yeah, when you are buying this $2 t-shirt from a fast fashion brand, think about the person in a factory across the world who made this t-shirt for you, and think about how few cents they've received for this t-shirt. So it's a great tip and a great reminder again. And another question that I love kind of ending the episodes with, what excites you the most about the ethical and sustainable movement right now?
Another great question. I would have to say the community.
Love it.
Right. So I wasn't around for, I guess, what's referred to as climate tech 1.0. We're kind of in this renaissance period as it relates to climate technology and the amount of dollars coming into the space and the community, the overall timing. It has a sense, it feels like we're on the precipice of something. I'll give a shout out to the My Climate Journey community. This was one of the first groups that I became a part of as I was getting into the world of climate. And I've seen that number of people just grow and grow. And the types of people that are attracted to that are so impressive and come from all different walks of life. And it gives me such hope for our future.
Love it. I love that you use the word community because listeners, and of course, if you're familiar with Brightly is first and foremost is all about community of our listeners, community of our ambassadors. Just like you, I mean, we've been blown away by the growth in the sustainability space, growth in the excitement, not excitement about climate change, but about fighting and really take very specific and timely steps to fight climate change and so on and so forth. So before we end, I would love for you to tell our listeners where they can find your company, and anything else you'd like to share before we kind of end our episode.
Well, I will say thank you for having me, first and foremost. This has been really fun. Please check us out on Instagram at Ether Diamonds. And if you want to shop our line, you can head over to etherdiamonds.com and get on the wait list. That wait list has grown quite considerably. So if you want to make sure you're able to get your hands on some of the first carbon negative diamonds, head over to etherdiamonds.com.
All right. It's been great talking to you, Ryan. I learned so much and I know our listeners will learn a lot too. Thank you.
Of course. Thanks so much.
Thanks for joining us on another episode of Good Together. As always, you can get show notes and explore lots more content related to all things eco-friendly living by checking out brightly.eco/podcast.
And don't forget to join in on the conversation that's happening on our Facebook group. Simply search Good Together Ethical Shopping and it'll come up. You can also leave us a question through voicemail. The link is on brightly.eco/podcast.
If you're into social media, give us a follow on Instagram, Facebook, and all of the channels. Our username is brightly.eco.
Finally, we want to leave you with a reminder. Every day is a chance for you to create change, and you're already covered for today since you joined us here on the podcast. Stay kind and live brightly.